Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
I'm Sonya Rappaport.
And today, Sonya, we are taking a break from the X-Men Task TV show to go back to the movies and discuss X-Men: The Last Stand.
Yep.
X-Men 3.
Great movie.
The greatest movie ever made. This movie is, I wouldn't describe it as great. I would describe it as a clusterfuck. I would describe it as a studio mangled Frankenstein of a movie. And there's many reasons for that, which we'll get into.
Yeah, I feel like that's generally known, and I only saw this movie once when it was in theaters and then never had the desire to go back to it again. And my expectations were very low because I remembered all of the reasons that it was not a good movie. And as we've discussed before, expectations are really the key to success or failure. And I had a really good time watching this movie the second time around.
Oh my God,
all these
crazy
years later. Aside from maybe three quarters of the way through, I got sucked into Instagram and I missed about 15 minutes. But other than that, I was thoroughly entertained.
Well, speaking of Instagram, my impression of rewatching this movie, and I haven't seen this movie too many times either in my life, although I did buy the DVD for some reason.
Because you're a hardcore X-Men fan.
Yeah, it was also at the time where it was before the MCU existed, and these movies weren't necessarily guaranteed to keep coming.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I better get X-Men 3, you know, to complete the set. And
exactly. This did seem like it was going to be the last one for reasons, again, that we'll go into in a little bit here. But
and speaking of Instagram, to me, this movie, visually, it looked like it was filmed through an Instagram filter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a lot of it does.
It looks like it reminded me, I've never really seen the Twilight movies, but visually it looked like what the Twilight movies, I think, look like.
Pale, good-looking actors in a forest.
With weird, like, blown-out hair and makeup.
And like, lipstick.
Yeah.
Men and women.
And hair highlights and everything. Everything was bizarre. We'll get into. You know, rewatch this movie for me, I didn't have quite as much fun as you did. I just...
You were sitting in sorrow the whole time?
No, I don't know. I before I started, I quickly glanced through Wikipedia about some of the facts, and they said at the time it was the most expensive movie ever made, which blew my mind.
What year is this from again?
2006.
Okay.
It had a $210 million budget, which is absurd.
Wow, I mean, was 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Right? It made $459.4 million, which I don't know if that qualifies it as a hit or not, because you always have to factor in marketing to the production budget, and I don't think they really list that when they list what the budget is. So the marketing was another $50 to $100
million. Yeah.
I guess it made some money, but it didn't make, you know, it didn't make tons of money relative to its budget. And generally, this movie was pretty disappointing to me when I first saw it as a fan. And just disappointing in general to fans of X-Men, I think, all around.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and so, but anyway, like you're saying, rewatching with fresh eyes right now, I was just, there's too much that let me down about it. One, the script was so hackneyed. And I don't even necessarily mean the plot, I mean the dialogue.
Yeah.
Just the one-liners that are constant and so...
Not well-written.
Lame and
not
bland.
Not well-performed.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't perform it well, I guess.
Hell hath no hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Yeah.
Is one that sticks out as the worst line in the movie to
awesome.
Me. So stupid. Delivered by that crappy, like, geriatric president they had.
Right.
They hired the completely character with no... With nothing, no juice behind it.
Yeah.
Who plays a, like, reasonably large role in the movie.
Yeah.
Anytime I see the president in this movie, I'm taken right out of it. It's just, I don't know, it's something, like, terribly cast and written.
How about Trask, recast from Peter Dinklage to...
Well, first cast.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage was the recast.
Right, right, but,
right,
like...
yeah, so Bolivar Trask is... it's an actor I've seen before, I don't know his name. We're not going to be heavy on details for this one, I just... don't care enough to bother to get all the details straight. There's other X-Men podcasts that will dive deep into these details.
Right.
Specifically X-Men's podcast whenever they get to it. our pals over there. But yeah, so it's like a black man that plays Bolivar Trask, and he's just the president's advisor who hints that he's with the president in terms of stopping the mutants. He's not a scientist that's creating the Sentinels.
Yeah. So
we're not
going, are we going plot point for plot point here?
Well, see, I mean, I felt obligated to keep notes just
there's like a lot to criticize.
Right.
Maybe we do that first and then we get to things we liked at the end.
Right. Right. Okay. I mean,
finish off on like a better note.
I have a rough outline of the plot. I think we should go through it, skeleton.
Okay.
Because there's going to be a lot to talk about with how the timeline gets messed up by this movie.
Yes.
I mean, this is like the major cause for the cinematic franchise getting messed up, the X-Men cinematic franchise, and like to keep like talking about the general like what happened with this movie, let's talk about the backstory.
Wrong.
Yeah. So I mean, X-Men 2 ended, we talked about it, we loved that movie, it's very good to me, that held up well.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it as an X-Men film. There's some things I didn't like about it. Namely, I didn't like Pyro, and I still don't like Iceman that much in Rogue. I don't like the young mutants they establish. And to me, like all the problems of that movie are really come to the forefront in this one. There's too many of those just, like, I don't know how to describe it, but just something about Sean Ashmore's Iceman and the guy who plays Pyro, just their blown out highlights in their hair and the makeup on their face. It just reminds me of Twilight and those types of actors.
You know, though, I actually thought they got better as they got older.
Post Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a show I liked, but just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
WB11 type style actors.
You don't want
actors.
That level of, like, campiness in your X-Men movies.
No.
Unless it's, like, on purpose, like it is in Buffy, right? Like,
right, yeah.
I think that's the difference, is that here, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's on purpose.
And it's a little bit, it's well written.
And here, it's clearly not on purpose, so.
Yeah, well, here it's like they're trying to show you a bunch of, like, hip, like, beautiful young actors in these parts, and I just...
They're, like, a little too shiny.
Yeah, aesthetically, I never liked the early 2000s, early to mid-2000s young teen movement, whatever it was, fashion-wise, was going on back then.
Yeah.
The post, like, 2000 millennial, you know, it's just ugly to me. And not realistic, and I don't know.
Those jeans.
And it extended
throughout the movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it extended to the main cast too, like Wolverine's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got like soft auburn highlights in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he's almost like wearing lipstick in some scenes.
It's like really blow-dried.
Yeah, and Storm too, her wig, Halle Berry, and of the three movies, I think this is Halle Berry's worst performance by far. Uh-huh. She's given more of a starring role, and all her lines of dialogue are terrible, and her acting is really cringeworthy, which is bizarre because she's a good actress.
Yeah.
But, like, there's just scenes where she's, like, hugging students at the mansion and her forced smiles. And, like, the scene where that really always grated at me on a subconscious level is when she meets Beast, played by Kelsey Grammer. Who surprisingly
also
I thought was
bizarre.
I thought he was good, though.
He was good, but it's like a bizarre casting.
Yeah.
Like, he's so much older than all the other X-Men, and like...
But the makeup makes him look kind of timeless looking.
No, I think like the way the character is written also is like, he's like a mature man, you know? And like everybody else is like more young and fit, even like the adult... Yeah, I don't mean the teenage cast. I mean the adult cast.
Well, anyway. I hate when Storm greets Beast in the mansion and they haven't seen each other in 10 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I just find Halle Berry's reaction is just insane. There's a scene... The acting is just really bad. Like, this is Hugh Jackman's worst movie, too.
Speaking of, I hate when Hugh Jackman... When Beast meets Wolverine in this movie,
we'll
also.
We'll get to that.
All right.
Yeah. Just generally, though, the acting of the main leads, which are essentially Halle Berry and Hugh Jackman, the main action stars, anyway, it's terrible. Like, it just... When Professor X dies, spoilers, they're both sad. And it's just an awful scene.
Yeah.
It's awfully acted.
I mean, again, like, it's not their fault. Like, they're both great actors in other movies.
Yeah.
But, like, there's something
in
with
other
this
X-Men
movie
movies, too, they're better.
It's like the... I don't know what. Anyway, what I was saying before was I think Pyro and Iceman both got better as these movies went along. Like, I know what you mean. They're still, like, a little, like, shiny WB teen stars.
Yeah.
But I think they, like, matured into the roles a little bit.
That's true. There is like, you get a sense of an arc of Iceman, at least in this movie, because his powers finally develop, and you see a bit more... There's a bit of realism with the way his relationship with Rogue develops. Pyro, I never cared for that character in X-Men 2, and I did not care for him in X-Men 3.
Fleshed out as a villain.
To me, Pyro is, how you doing, mates? I'm Pyro. I wear a red and yellow spandex outfit.
So you don't like him because he doesn't match what you expect from the cartoon or the comics?
It's not like I love the character from the cartoon or comics that much either. I'm just saying Pyro's a dumb character to begin with.
Yeah, okay.
And the fact that they try to make him... He's like, they make him like the dark and brooding human torch, mm-hmm. essentially, who can't turn himself on fire.
Right.
Like the, but it's the, that's what it is. He's a blonde-haired, you know, Johnny Storm that's evil.
Okay.
And I just never liked it. But talking more about the production of this movie, you know, Bryan Singer was supposed to come back and complete the trilogy. But instead, he quit to do Superman Returns for some reason. He thought that was, like, a step up from the X-Men franchise. Which, I guess at the time, it, like, there might have been more prestige to bringing back Superman than to continue X-Men, which was sort of like a its own upstart of a franchise.
Right.
And he's like, oh, Superman, this is really what I should be doing.
That's where the money is.
Yeah, and that was a huge mistake, because that movie stunk. And also, he dragged along James Marsden with him.
Right.
So that limited Cyclops' role in this movie, which is a huge fan problem.
Uh-huh.
That Cyclops wasn't a big part of this movie, and James Marsden was... actually good in Superman Returns, but weirdly a strange character in that film because he looked like Superman.
Yeah.
So in that movie, he was the guy Lois Lane is dating when Superman leaves Earth to go to Krypton.
Uh-huh.
And,
Who played Superman in that movie?
Brandon Routh.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was
so... thought James Marsden should have been Superman.
I'm saying that it was just bizarre. You've cast two, like, square-jawed white men with like sleek black hair,
and all right,
who cast like an heroic cut to their jib, whatever. Anyway, it was Superman Returns has a lot of problems. It's a weird movie,
mm-hmm.
and I remember being really excited to see that too, and being enormously let down.
Mm-mm.
Because that movie and the premise of it had everything I wanted from a Superman movie. He was doing a continuation to the original Christopher Reeves ones,
mm-hmm.
and cutting out Superman 3 and 4, which were the bad ones.
Yeah.
Although Superman 3 has its moments. And it's like, wow, like that's my taste, exactly.
Uh-huh.
But he just, that movie was tonally terrible.
All right, anyways.
Yeah, back to X-Men. So Bryan Singer's out and Brett Ratner steps in. I think at some point they wanted Mick G to direct this movie, who's another like popular music video director at the time. I don't know. The hiring of Brett Ratner and the suggestion of Mick G, to me, it's just nothing but disdain from the Fox executives for the X-Men franchise as a whole, which is a theme that ran through the production of these movies. They like apparently they never believed in X-Men 1, so they like have the budget or something. They were surprised at its success. X-Men 2, they gave more money to allow it to be made, but still kind of cheaped out in a weird way. And X-Men 3, after Singer left, they really... It was like a strange combination of like, yeah, let's give it the most amount of money to make it ever, but let's kill the franchise at the same time, and let's cheap out where we can.
Hmm.
If you read the Wikipedia page about the production, they like weirdly... like tried to save money despite spending a boatload of money.
Yeah.
And that was like the theme. I don't think the Fox executives ever liked the X-Men franchise in a weird way. And as a result, they like, I think Simon Kernberg and Zach Penn wrote the screenplay to this, and they had to take a lot of studio notes. And I think to an extent they're studio hacks as well. There's nothing like that artistically bold about them. I think that's why. And Simon Kernberg is the guy behind the X-Men Dark Phoenix movie that's to come out, and that is has a lot of problems in it, supposedly. So, like, there's something about Fox. They're not pouring the love into the X-Men franchise like they should. And it's only occasionally that we get the love in the franchise, be it in, you know, X-Men 1 and 2, I'd say, and Logan and Deadpool.
Yeah.
They got a lot of love. Maybe X-Men First Class to an extent, but whatever.
That'll all change in the future.
Yeah,
right.
Hopefully. Anyway,
so
point is, if you read the Wikipedia page, they say that they were forced to cut characters, kill characters. Like, the studio wanted to kill Cyclops because they didn't like a character who you couldn't read his eyes.
And therefore,
you know, like, how could the audiences connect to a character you can't see his eye movements?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, here's an idea. He wears sunglasses most of the time. Give him a lighter shade of red so you can see his eyeballs.
Or don't worry about it. Like, hire an actor. I mean, James Marsden is a good actor.
Yeah, it's really good.
He, portrays emotion on his face without you seeing his eyes and, through his vocal intonation and, body movements and all the other tools that actors use to, convey emotion. Yeah. It's not a big deal if you have, a talented actor.
Yeah, he actually, in this movie, he the 10 seconds he's in it, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He shows a lot of emotion, a lot of physicality. It's bizarre. What else? So, I mean, this movie, it was weirdly set up to fail, even though they blew it out to be a huge hit. And so, like I said, the whole premise of it, The Last Stand, which is a dumb subtitle, we should just call it X-Men 3, who cares? The premise is, we're ending the franchise. This is the end. Maybe we'll do some Hugh Jackman spinoffs, which was, I think, their plan. They just want to make Wolverine movies.
Right.
Why do we need the rest of these X-Men? And then that, completely, fell in the gutter, too, when X-Men Origins Wolverine came out, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
So they, really tried their best to just, kill off all your favorite characters, tie up all these plot strands that they started in the other two movies, and just put a real finality on it, which was really short-sighted, because the X-Men is designed to go on and on and on, like all Marvel movies.
Right.
It's not meant to end. I mean, we'll see what Avengers 4 is like as a franchise, because that's going to be the end of one chapter. But really, those movies aren't stopping either. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so that's the premise. So let's just sort of jump through the plot and just see if we can remember anything interesting to talk about this silly movie. It opens with a flashback 20 years ago. We see for the first time in a Marvel movie the de-younging effect,
right,
of Magneto and Professor X.
Wait, are you saying that it's for the first time in a Marvel movie, or are you saying that this Marvel movie is the first time that this has been done in a movie?
Both. That it's it's you're seeing, they're trying to de-age actors digitally.
Right, and this movie is the first instance of that happening in a movie.
Yeah, which I forgot, because they're doing that more and more in these Marvel films, and Star Wars movies. Yeah, it's very bizarre to see, and it's...
You can always see it around the eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
They, soften it up too much.
Right. There's this weird hallucinogenic glow around the faces in general that looks pretty bad, at least in 2006. I mean, it doesn't look terrible.
I don't think it looks so bad. It's just that, to our now-trained eyes, it's obvious.
Right. I think they're going to get better and better at it. For instance, we just saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, and there's a scene with young Michael Douglas and young Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah,
and that looked really good. Yeah. We
can talk more about that movie later, maybe.
Right. Yeah, we can. We also saw... Captain Marvel, the movie that's coming out. It stars Sam Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing young Nick Fury. And they digitally de-aged him throughout the whole film to look 25 years younger.
Oh, they do it in the whole film?
I think so, yeah. So it's they're taking it to the next level. It's not just going to be a few short scenes. You know, we saw the younger Tony Stark in Captain America Civil War.
Right.
There's that scene. That looked pretty convincing, I thought.
Yeah.
So they've done it. You know, I've made the argument that they should have... Disney should have gone for broke with the Solo movie,
mm-hmm,
and just had Harrison Ford cast him and just de-young him the whole film.
De-age him?
De-age him, right. Yeah, de-young him, right. De-age him throughout the entire film. Just go for broke. You know, Star Wars is about big, bold special effects.
Yeah.
And that would have made trillions of dollars, because I think people, even if it looked bad and didn't quite work, I still think people would have gone for the gimmick.
Yeah.
You know? So I think this is an interesting, just... transformation in movies now, the fact that they can de-age actors,
mm-hmm,
and an actor could theoretically just, you know... Oh, we also saw Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
We've really seen a lot, especially in these Marvel movies. It's crazy.
I'm trying to think what it is that's... It's always, the lighting. You know what I mean? Their faces are always a little bit brighter.
Like a nostalgic glow to them or something.
Right.
It's half intentional, half, it's very expensive and they can't keep it up in every shot.
All right, yeah.
I don't know.
The lighting just isn't, quite right on them a lot of times, but other than that, it's pretty good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's okay. And for 2006, you can see that they, this is part of the $210 million budget they put into making Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart look 20 years younger.
Right.
Okay,
so we see them 20 years ago.
They're recruiting a young Jean Grey, who's a psychopath child.
Yeah.
kind of rewriting her backstory a bit. They're establishing that when she was very young, she was super powerful. She could not She could not only use her telekinesis three times the charm, she could also read minds, mm-hmm. which in the original comics she couldn't read minds at first. She only had telekinesis. Mm-hmm. So they're recruiting her to join the X-Men. This is her first timeline continuity error because he's already got an Xavier School like brochure.
Right.
And in the subsequent movies we see with X-Men First Class and Days of Future Past, like, Magneto and Xavier, there's never a point where they're running the school together in that way, where the school, you know what I mean? Like, the normal establishment of the school is that, hey, it's a school for gifted youngsters, parents. You don't know this is a mutant school, necessarily.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a secret. Like, Iceman's parents think they're just sending him to, like, a school for special kids.
Right.
Not necessarily because he's a mutant. So this continues along that theme.
It actually doesn't make sense to me why Ian McKellen is along with him.
Right, in yeah.
This, because it's,
why are they friends?
They're not setting it up as though they're, like, co-running the school.
I mean, they sort of are. That was my impression.
That's not what I thought. Because when they're standing outside, Charles is just like, oh, like, you had to come along for this one because this one's really special.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which implies that, like, Magneto's not usually involved with the school activity and stuff like that. He just wanted him to know Jean Grey, but I don't really understand why.
I think there's a strong implication they're partners at this point.
I don't know about that.
All right. Well, either way, it goes against the continuity of the movies to come.
Right.
It's the first of many instances like that. I'm not going to be able to remember them all. Then we cut to... So Jean Grey, she's ultra-powerful. She's borderline evil.
Yeah.
And so that's the way they're going to ham-fist the Phoenix story into this movie, mm-hmm. Which is a great disappointment to many a fan.
Yep.
So next, we get a shot of a young boy in a bathroom, and this is one of the most gruesome scenes in any X-Men movie.
This is 10 years ago.
Oh, okay, really? Right? I didn't even notice that they yet. Said. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, this was, like, visceral and, like, gross.
Right. So Warren Worthington III is a young boy. He's basically in his bathroom trying to cut off his wings with a bunch of, like knives.
Sharp objects.
Yeah.
He's got, like, a grater. He's, like, grating off.
So disgusting. They show it's bloody.
Right.
It'd be one thing if his wings were just all feathers and you just snip them and it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah, but they really show that it's, like, they're appendages.
Right.
Like, you imagine that has to really hurt.
Yeah,
it's like trying to cut off your arms or legs or something.
I don't think that a boy would be able to cut off a thing like that of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's disgusting. The father, who's this rich billionaire, industrialist, or scientist or something, he comes in, he catches the boy, and he's horrified, and that inspires his father to look for a cure for mutancy. I don't know. The character of Angel in this movie is very inconsistent, I would say, as far as motivation.
He's just not really, like, fleshed out.
No, not at all. It was pointless to even introduce him.
Yeah.
So then we cut to the not too distant future again, where the X-Men live in this hazy time frame.
Mm.
And the X-Men are in a post-apocalyptic world with a bunch of laser beams and metal monsters roaming around. You think it's Terminator, but it's not. It's
Sentinel.
It's the Danger Room, right.
Yeah.
They're in the Danger Room. They're fighting a large Sentinel who we don't really see except for the end when Wolverine cuts its head off. And the large head falls next to Wolverine. And, like, weirdly enough, in all the movies, to me, this is the closest you get to what the Sentinels are like from the comics and the cartoon.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, a really good representation of a Sentinel.
But
actually,
you still don't see the whole Sentinel. Like,
yeah,
that's my
but whatever, I don't care.
I know, I care. I want to see one of these movies
see his head cut off and, like, thunks to the floor. Like, it's cool.
Yeah, but I want to see, like, an army of these things, Godzilla-sized, roaming through New York City and the X-Men fighting them.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me... Well, I don't necessarily need to see that. I'm just saying, if you're going to do the Sentinels, that's what I need to see. I need to see that kind of level of insanity.
I don't. Because to me, that just, like, I don't know.
I need to see Cyclops shooting them, like, you know.
Because that's going to be another one of these scenes where it's like the Sentinels are wreaking havoc on New York City, killing countless people.
To me, that's a
There's
movie.
There's no consequences. It's like any of these other battle scenes that you see in these movies.
You're absolutely right about that. There's too many robot movies or monster movies where they're destroying a city.
Yeah.
I agree. But I'm just saying that if you're going to do the Sentinels,
do it right.
That's the premise of which I need to see them. I need to see them the size of buildings.
No, I want to see them on Genosha.
I need to see Wolverine, like, slashing them. Like,
yeah, fine. You can have, like, a whole full-blown fight between the X-Men and the Sentinels.
Right.
But I don't want to see it in New York City. I feel like I've seen that too much.
It doesn't need to be done in New York.
I want it to be on Genosha in the jungle with, like, a whole, like, army of them coming
out
of trees or something.
So this is the premise for your movie. Magneto's established his mutant, like, society on Genosha.
Yeah.
Which is they've kind of done the comics. And then Sentinels come and then they invade it.
Basically, I want them to make what was it was from like season two or something, yeah. right? Where there's like an X-Men TAS episode about Genosha where they go on vacation. It's like a yeah. two-parter. yeah. I want them to just make that a
slave labor camp.
Yeah, yeah, basically,
that's a good idea.
Just make that a movie.
That's a great idea. You're absolutely right. You could do the Sentinels. You don't have to show them in New York. That's fine. But I still need to see Storm, like, lightning bolting them and Rogue flying around punching them in the face.
Yeah,
like,
that'd be cool.
I'm into that. Anyway, so you get a like, weirdly, the closest you're going to get to the cartoon Sentinels in this movie. The X-Men, you see, you know, without Cyclops isn't there, he's psychologically distraught from Jean Grey dying in the last movie.
Yeah.
So you see Storm, Colossus, who gets a bigger part in this movie. I think the actor is Daniel Cudmore. Could be wrong there. You see Kitty Pryde as Ellen Page playing Kitty Pryde is introduced.
I like that casting.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's one of the few new characters that really works in the film.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of spunk and energy. So unfortunately, she got... I think it came out recently. She said that she was sexually harassed in the movie by the director, Brett Ratner.
Really? I missed that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he insulted her, you know... I forget how, but he said some stuff really nasty to her and made her feel really, like, small and terrible. So talk about problematic X-Men directors. You get Bryan Singer,
yeah.
who has sort of, like, been run out of Hollywood at this point for his alleged abuses, and Brett Ratner, too, has also been Me Too'd out of Hollywood. And, yeah. you know, Brett Ratner is not really a guy whose sympathy anyone deserves.
Uh-huh.
He's a real scumbag. If you, like, read about the stuff he did, he had some
Who
kind of...
Who deserves anyone's sympathy.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, whatever. But Ellen Page is really good in this movie.
Yeah.
And Iceman's on the team. And anyway, so...
And Colossus, we see.
Right, Colossus, as I mentioned. He does they establish the fastball special in this movie, which is the famous... team-up move between Wolverine and Colossus where Colossus always throws him and stuff.
Yeah, we talked about this last time. I wish Colossus was explored more as a character in this movie.
Well, you get a whole lot of Colossus in the Deadpool movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Like a dopier version of him.
Right.
This is the more grounded-to-earth version of Colossus.
I know. I just feel like they like introduced so many characters in this movie that are like great characters and didn't really do anything with them.
No, it's garbage.
Yeah.
It's a garbage... It's all about tying up the character threads they started in the first two movies. It's not about exploring the X-Men world in any kind of depth or detail or getting into the deep character study. It's just about, like, swirling a bunch of action around stuff we already know and seeing how it all plays out.
Yeah, I know. They really continue the storyline with Bobby and Rogue.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's so... We've been over that territory so many times, you know?
It's boring.
They introduce, like, Kitty Page and Colossus, and they don't do anything with them. Like,
no, not really.
What a loss.
Right. Well, and Kitty Page doesn't even have a real connection to Colossus in this movie.
I mean, Kitty Pryde.
Right. Well, yeah. Kitty Page. That's funny.
Ellen Pryde.
Right. So, speaking of Rogue and Iceman, we see them after the Danger Room session. They're, like, really upset at each other. Well, Rogue's really upset because she's just fed up with her powers that she can't make out with her boyfriend.
Right.
And she's resenting Bobby, even though he still seems nice to her, the fact that...
Ugh, I hate that scene, too.
It's horrible, yeah. Just coming out real angry and...
Well, I mean, that's fine. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so they had a fight, but... Like, what's the dialogue like if Bobby says, like...
Yeah, it's just so hackneyed and on the nose. She's like, I'm tired of not being able to touch my boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's like, I never pressured you. She's like, you're a guy, Bobby. That's what all boys want.
Right. So here's, like, an opportunity for her to be like, yeah, but I want to touch you. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it implies that, like, men are the enemy and that, like, men are the only ones that are interested in a physical relationship. But, like, why don't they use that as, like, an opportunity to flesh out her character? Like, she... You know what I mean? Like, it's stupid. Like, the very last line in the movie or something is about her being like, yeah, but I wanted to be able to touch you. Like, it's about her for the first time.
Right, yeah.
Instead of, like, putting blame on Bobby for being, like, a gross man.
Right.
Which is, like, not realistic, you know?
Right. And he himself, he's a gentleman, too, in a way.
Right.
It's just, you know, so Rogue really gets shelved in this movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
She sort of is just there as a extended cameo, more or less. And she's there to sort of represent So the whole plot of this movie, there's two plots. There's the Phoenix plot, which sucks, and then there's the Cure plot, which is kind of interesting, but also is not done that well. So the government, with the help of Warren Worthington II, I guess, has come up with a cure to cure mutants. They've captured this boy named Leech, who's not the Leech we see from the Morlocks episode.
Yeah, I know. Unless, so stupid.
Unless he's yet to change. I don't know. Like, is that part of Leech's powers? We see a lot of weird Leech powers in the cartoon.
Do we? I don't even really remember.
He has telekinesis. Yeah. And he looks like a frog, so I don't know.
Right, yeah.
I don't know what Leech's other powers are in the comics or the cartoon, necessarily. I'm not a Leech head. But in this movie, he's just this white boy with a bald head that can just cancel out mutant powers.
Right.
In a very dramatic way.
An unseen bubble around him, basically. If you, enter his personal space within a few feet, then, as a mutant, your powers go away.
Right.
So, I don't know, Facebook X-Men fans, if you know anything about that, let us know, please.
So, basically, the government's trying to get Leech's DNA and turn it into a cure to cure mutancy. And I always found the political argument around the cure very bizarre. It did never seem realistic to me.
Right.
Because on the one hand, you have the Magneto side of things, and even Storm expresses it too, where we don't need a cure. You know, we're born the way we are. It's fine.
Uh-huh.
And this came up in the cartoon as well, where Wolverine expresses this opinion.
Uh-huh.
And Professor X is like, I don't know, it's like some people might welcome a cure.
Yeah.
Or Jean says that too, and they zoom in on Rogue in the cartoon right away.
Right.
Because she then sees Scott and Jean holding hands, right, lovingly. And
I mean, it makes sense, you know, yeah, for their characters.
I mean, there's a lot of mutants that would want the cure. I mean, some people are born with debilitating dog man-like lifestyle.
Yeah, right. Maybe you know? They want to choose a different life.
Yeah, I mean, some people are born, with really deforming or hideous.
You know what, though? I think, there's a good chance that this would happen in the real world if this were, a thing, right? Because to you and me and them, it's like, well, the whole point is that you should be able to have a choice over your own life.
Right.
Whereas the other side is, no, because you might do harm to all of us. Right,
yeah.
It's like, well, Magneto's, there are some parallels to, the abortion.
yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's not exactly the same, but, the controversy over, the right to choose.
Okay.
Versus, you've brought a life into this world, and it is what it is, and you have to deal with the consequences.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. There's some parallels there. I would say, to me, you know, Magneto's greatest fear is that they're weaponizing the cure, and he's afraid that they're just going to use it against mutants. But the cure is so benign, though, in a way. First of all, it's a wonder drug, because if it just took away the power aspects, that'd be one thing, but it also physically transforms characters
into humans.
Yeah, which is and painlessly so.
Right.
You know, you see it with Beast so briefly, you see it with Mystique later.
Right.
Where their whole entire physical body is transformed into that of a normal human, as if there's a normal human underneath their mutated form, which doesn't make sense, I don't think, either, because they're born that way. So Mystique was born as a blue
their
creature.
Genetic code. To make it all, non-mutated genes, right?
Yeah, I guess, but it's too magical. That's my point. It's it's super magical the way it works instantaneously and painlessly, the way it transforms a body, transforms people's skin.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. It's unrealistic that would actually work, but, mutants are not, so realistic anyways.
No, no.
I see what you're saying. Magneto was overreacting because it's not like anybody's dying if they get shot with this quote-unquote cure.
Yeah.
Right? They're still alive, but they just live their lives as humans now.
Yeah.
But, also I see the point that, your mutant powers are a huge part of your identity and how you've, grown and transformed into, an adult person or whatever.
Right.
Your whole existence is informed by your mutant powers, and all of a sudden you have to adapt to be a different person.
But also, but there's not this centuries long tradition of mutants so much. There's been mutants through history, which they're very rare though.
Uh-huh.
But it's only in the 20th century that in the story of X-Men where the mutant population's exploded.
So what?
So my point is that mutants haven't been around that long, and people haven't been mutants that long.
So
my point is, if there's a cure all of a sudden, you're 20 years old, you're part of the first or second wave of mutants,
mm-hmm.
you're oh, okay, so you could cure me of, this affliction I had?
Yeah.
All right. I wouldn't be so offended by it, because it's not like you're necessarily in like a community that has all these traditions and...
I don't think that matters, though. If you've been a mutant your entire life...
Right, yeah. No, and, I agree. Like, I'm playing devil's advocate.
The way you move around in the world is as a mutant, then you have to become a different person if you don't have mutant powers all of a sudden.
I mean, I could definitely see people who have awesome powers being offended that someone would want to take them away.
Yeah.
If you look great, like Jean Grey or Professor X or like Wolverine, and you got these great awesome powers that make you a super person,
yeah,
and then someone's like, yeah, you can't have that. You're like, hey.
Well, but the other thing that's offensive about it, I think, from their point of view, is that the people who are deciding this are not mutants themselves, and in fact, yeah, it doesn't affect them too much whether people around them are mutants or not, you know. But like,
I'm just saying,
it's the same thing as like pro-life people, right?
Right.
Should I not get this political?
Well, what are you going to say?
I mean, like, most people that are pro-life are men. So it doesn't really affect them whether people around them are allowed to have abortions or not. And yet they're trying to exercise this control over other people's bodies. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So like, people who are pro-mutant cure,
right,
are mostly not mutants.
Yeah.
And they're trying to exercise control over other people's bodies. It's weird. Like, it's a weird thing to do.
I agree. I think that is the argument against the cure.
Yeah.
One of the big arguments. My thing is like...
I like how we're debating this. Like, this is a real issue in our,
yeah,
in our world. Go ahead. What's your thing?
I just think that like the cure... I think in a world where Professor X wins, where let's say, you know, the positivity side of the mutant battle wins, like humans and mutants get along with each other.
Yeah.
And let's just say, oh, you don't want to be a mutant? Here's a cure for it. I think, like, that to me is fine.
Yeah.
And if it's not forced, and if it's not, if it's someone's choice to take it.
Exactly.
I don't think the cure is, like, so explosive of a thing to exist for a war to break out.
Right.
That's my only point, is that Magneto takes his, like, to him, like, this is the last, you know what my problem with it is? A lot of it has to do with the script. Magneto refers to this as a genocide.
Yeah.
It's not a genocide.
No, nobody's
bro.
Dying.
Yeah, I mean, they're just taking away your like extra powers.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're taking away, they're not like they're blinding you or taking away your sense of hearing. I mean, I guess like as a mutant it might be offensive if you heard that. Like, you're taking away my ability to read thoughts.
Right.
Like, that is like a sense of mine. That's natural.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay, but I don't know. It's just...
What he means by genocide is that, like, they're wiping out the mutant population and replacing it with a human population.
Yeah, but no one's going anywhere.
No, I know. I know what you mean. Genocide is a strong word, but...
It's you know what, like, a parallel would be that's, like, really... Like, that would be fucked up?
Hmm.
It's if it's... And, you know... If you're listening to this podcast, you know, just take all the stuff with a grain of salt, what I'm about to say. If, like... Some racist white people had a cure for blackness, and they put it in a like a gun with needles, and they shot it at black people. It's like, oh, you're white now. You could live as white people.
Uh-huh.
Like, that would be insanely fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, is that what I'm saying? By being on the side of the cure, am I saying that? I'm just trying to, like, think through this.
Again, it's like, you know, in our, like, real world, the color of your skin, like, makes you into a certain person. And
yeah,
how you, like, navigate the world is informed by what you look like and your culture and where you come from, right?
But, so, like, the flip side of that is that if you're a true progressive, you want to live in a world where people get along regardless of the way they look.
Get along, yes.
Right,
but
okay, but
that
not
doesn't...
change their culture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But wouldn't the end game of that, and this is grain of salt, people, wouldn't the end game of that be that, like, in 1,000 years, let's say we've had 1,000 years of progress,
uh-huh,
that a lot of that cultural stuff would go away in a sense, too, and people would, like, mesh into more of a Star Trek world where no one even notices it that much? And it's, you know what I'm saying, where it's like this post-utopia where, you know.
10,000 years, but...
Okay, but you know what I'm saying.
Even so, I mean, not necessarily, right? Because that means that, like, yeah, you're getting rid of all the bad stuff that comes along with having differences, the, you know, racism and prejudice and all that stuff, but you might also be getting rid of the good stuff, which is, like, cultural traditions and, like, if everything
right.
melts together, then you don't have those more, like... specific like cultural aspects
mm-hmm.
anymore
yeah.
maybe
right
you know?
No absolutely
so it's not yeah. like I don't know
it's an interesting discussion. I think that like weaponizing the cure is definitely bad. So let me just say that.
Okay.
I think some mutants might want the cure.
Uh-huh.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get back into it based on what we talk about here. So you know, we're back at the school. We see that Kitty Pryde's in class with Professor X. There's just one little moment here that I thought was interesting where they're talking about the theory of relativity or something, mm-hmm. and Einstein comes up, and Professor X is like, Einstein wasn't a mutant, not as far as we know. Wink, wink. And I just thought that was weird because in a future movie, in X-Men Days of Future Past, Magneto insisted JFK was a mutant.
Right.
And so this is the establishment of maybe like rewriting historical figures as mutants.
Right.
So that stuck out to me.
Anyone who ever accomplished anything was actually a mutant.
Yeah. You know, we see that we're introduced to the character of Beast, who is working for the president. He's one of the president's top advisors, which is pretty progressive of the president, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And this is full Blue Beast.
Yeah.
We've seen Hank McCoy in cameos in, I think, the two previous movies on television screens, and he's a white guy.
Yeah.
He's like a middle-aged white guy, so he hasn't yet done the... I think the implication here is that he hasn't yet done the experiment that turns him blue.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... They sort of get into in X-Men First Class. He experiments on himself and turns himself blue, but he does it as a teenager.
Yeah,
which, again, messes
younger.
Up the timeline.
Right.
Yeah. But Kelsey Grammer as Beast, I think, is actually really, he's really good. He's basically playing the cartoon Beast.
Mm-hmm.
The classic 90s cartoon Beast.
I think it's such a strange casting. He does a good job,
yeah.
But it just, it's weird to me.
It's weird to see Kelsey Grammer in a movie. I mean, like, I know he's a major TV star. Frasier was a great show.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's on Cheers. You know, beloved as Sideshow Bob on The Simpsons. Did he do many movies after Frasier ended? I know he did a few. He did that, like, stupid Navy movie where it was, like, a comedy spoof.
I really have no idea about the career of Kelsey Grammer. Just to me, like, the tone is a little bit off because for Kelsey Grammer, it's very natural to, like, refer to other people as, like, boy and son and
yeah.
stuff like that. But for Beast, it is not natural. That, like, I don't think that's... That would be part of his, like, characterization,
I think
if it was by anyone else.
I think the reason he was cast is because he's known as an intellectual, at least in the characters he plays.
Yeah.
And Beast is the supreme intellectual.
Yeah.
So, and he's haughty.
Right.
So, I think in a sense
But he's
that's
not,
when,
like, condescending.
Right. He's a little more, like, good-hearted.
Yeah.
In that way. But I think there's a little... You know what? In the margins, there's a condescending nature to Beast. In the comics and stuff, when you read about him.
You think so?
Yeah, he's got like a grumpy side to him.
Because
he's this brilliant scientist, and he's also sort of... He's done his best to put a good face on his own mutation, but he's secretly really sad about it.
Yeah.
And he gets angry with his teammates a lot.
Right.
You know, he gets enraged a little bit.
Yeah,
so, you know, I think there's some complexity there. We're also introduced to Moira MacTaggert, not played by Rose Byrne, some other...
Right, a different Moira.
Right. She, and younger, too, than she should be, I guess, based on the timeline. So she screwed up, and they introduced the element of body transfer.
Right.
Like, that's what's going on in Professor X's class, which is they're setting up the fact that, you know, Professor X dies, and they bring him back to life in a really stupid way.
Yeah.
Why kill him in the first place is what I say about that.
You got a shock and a maze. That's
You know, I mean, this movie is just, like, there's too many dumb moments. Like, so Professor X suspends his class because he sees storm clouds out, and he's like, that's not right. And he goes, he sees Storm on the balcony of the X-Mansion.
Brooding.
Yeah, and he's like, she's like, oh, Professor.
He says, oh, the forecast was sunshine today. She goes, oh, sorry, and she, like, fixes the weather.
Yeah,
it's
and
weird.
He's like, I didn't have to read your mind to see that you were upset. And it's just so stupid. Like, yeah, we get it. She's upset because she's making the storm clouds. You don't need to say it.
Yeah.
And the way she reacts to it is so, it's way too good-natured. Like you said, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll make it sunny.
Yeah.
You know, and she smiles.
It's
instead of her actually being brooding. So that was stupid. I forget what even... and he, like, hints to her, like, oh, you're going to take over the X-Mansion one day.
Yeah.
It's like he knows he's going to die soon, which doesn't make any sense either.
Right. Well, they have to set it up.
Right. And then more set... So Beast visits the X-Mansion, and that's where he meets Wolverine. And the first thing he says to Wolverine is, like, oh, I hear you're quite an animal. And he says it with a real, like, scorn in his face.
Uh-huh.
Why is he...
I don't know.
Hostile to Wolverine right away.
I don't know. And it also doesn't make sense because...
It doesn't
even
pay
unless
off.
It's, like, way back in the comics
right.
that I don't know about, it's possible. But, like, Beast and Wolverine always have, like, a pretty good friendship.
They're friendly. But that's what happens to the relationship in this movie. They become friends by the end for no reason other than the fact that they're just two nice people.
Yeah.
You know,
so why don't they start out that way? Like, there's no reason for it to be contentious in the beginning. It's weird.
And also, the timeline is screwed up, but, like, did he meet Beast earlier? I mean, you know, in Days of Future Past, he goes back in time and meets Beast.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's bizarre. And then, what else is going on in this movie? Yeah, so that was, like, a weird off note. And then they discover that the government is, like, they're manufacturing this cure on Alcatraz Island for some reason.
That's where they're keeping Leech, this version of Leech.
Right, yeah. And Storm is really against the cure.
Yeah.
She's like, there's nothing wrong with any of us. And she says it so nervously. She looks around the room. It's almost like she has mutant pride, but she's still a little embarrassed to express it in a strange way.
Right.
You ever get that, like, sense? Like, versus certain people who want to be progressive, but you could still sense that they have a little bit of fear in expressing their progressiveness. I don't know. I picked up that weird energy from her in that scene. And then, like, you know, so a cure has been announced. There's a... The local mutants are meeting in some church somewhere. They're having, like, a mutant rally, and they're trying to figure out how they feel about the cure. And, like I suggested, there's mixed feelings. They're kind of like, well, you know, are we being attacked? Is this cure good for us? Like, what do we do? And people are really angry at this meeting, but Magneto comes sort of, like, in a weird... It's allusions to Hitler, I think. You know, I hate to draw that parallel because Magneto's Jewish. He was a victim of the Holocaust.
I don't think it's really... Go ahead.
Yeah, but the point is, like, Hitler would go into these public meetings in Germany in the 1920s and stuff and, like, rabble-rouse.
Yeah.
And say, like, oh, you're unemployed. You're, you know, things aren't working out for you. It's like, we got to attack. You know, you got to join me. It's time to fight back kind of thing. Like, this sort of, like, violent uprising of, like, local communities. So Magneto's playing that role here.
I mean, I don't think that's like a direct allusion to Hitler. That's just what like grassroots organizers do, right?
Well, grassroots evil organizers, ones that want to rise up and be like tyrannical dictators and stuff. So that's my allusion to Hitler. It's here we meet some like other mutants. We're gonna see like a bunch of Magneto type accolades. I don't know all their names. There's Spiky Boy. He's sort of like a character from a newer character from the comics and cartoon, like in the next cartoon, the X-Men school show. I always forget what it's called.
Yeah.
And then there's like a bastardized version of Psylocke.
Right.
A purple-haired Asian mutant who doesn't really have a part in the movie.
No, we just see her briefly.
All right, so another timeline mess up there because we see Psylocke as Olivia Munn come back later.
Yeah, right. And then the mutant that, like, can run really fast, like Quicksilver, sort of.
I don't even think we get her name in the movie.
I don't think so either, she also can, like, sense mutants, other mutants,
and she ranks them
are.
By power level, which is so lame. I hate that shit.
Yeah.
She's like, you're the only level 5 mutant in here.
No, level 3, she said.
No, level 3 and above. I think Magneto is a level 5.
Right. Yeah,
whatever.
Okay.
It's so dumb to even rank them.
And then she says, like, Pyro and Magneto, she refers to as the only two level 3 or above mutants in the room.
Something like that,
right.
Yeah. And so he's like, you can detect mutants? I need you to find one for me.
Yeah.
And so he gets a few people to join him. It doesn't look like his speech at the rally is that convincing. A lot of people are kind of annoyed he's even there.
Yeah, they're suspicious.
And there's another character called Arclight, who she's kind of, I don't know, this weird background character who can cause shockwaves. Mm-hmm. And it's here where Magneto's referring to the cure as a form of genocide.
Yeah.
Which I think me and you both agree is not. That's a little hyperbolic. And again, I hate the class levels. It's so dumb to me. That's like almost equivalent of talking about midichlorians in Star Wars. So anyway, also what's going on is Mystique has been captured throughout this whole movie. Her plan is to figure out where they're generating the cure from. So she's like sort of undercover being arrested. And you see her on this like large moving convoy across a highway, and she's behind a prison bar, and she's taunting the security guard in there, and I hate this scene as well, where, you know, they're just both weirdly out of character. Mystique is, like, overly mean-spirited to the character, to the security guard. The security guard is also over the top as an asshole. He's like, I'll spray you in the face, bitch. You know, there's a lot of bitch talk in this movie, which is kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think that's aged quite so well. In a weird way. Just the way they use it so casually.
Uh-huh.
With no character. Like, it's just, like, a normal thing for people to say.
That was, like, an end-of-the-90s stamp of toughness.
Right. And it's just, like you mentioned, you mentioned this to me, it's weird how Mystique couldn't escape the jail.
Yeah. Because, like, she can transform, so why doesn't she transform into, like, a very...
she's handcuffed, like, above her head.
Yeah, and she, like, transforms into a child, right?
How come her hands can't slip out of it?
Yeah, why doesn't she just transform into a child small enough to slip her hands out and then, like...
Well, we do learn later that she's been captured on purpose, so I think she's waiting for Magneto to save her.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I don't like... I mean, it's good for Rebecca Romijn that she got more lines in this movie as herself. This is the most she's allowed to speak in any of these movies. But what happens to her character is kind of a travesty. We'll see. So then, meanwhile, what happens next? So Cyclops, I guess he's been getting strange...
He's been getting, like, psychic messages from Jean.
Right.
And he doesn't, like, see much. He just, like, hears her calling for him.
Right.
So he, like, realizes he has to go to Alkali Lake, where she was last seen, where she presumably died. But he's, like, drawn there. So he, like, packs up his stuff. He gets on his motorcycle. He drives up there, and he's, like, tormented in his brain by these messages from Jean.
Right. So then, because they have to show his power, he rips off his glasses and just blasts the lake.
Which doesn't make sense, because, like, if Jean is somehow alive down there, that blast is gonna kill her, so, like...
Or was the blast what she needed for energy?
She needed that, like, boost of energy or something?
I don't know. I don't know what they're implying by that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what they're just implying simply is that Jean's alive... And as a result, she's called Scott to the lake because she's kind of crazy. And when he gets there, that's enough to really wake her up for good.
Uh-huh.
And she wakes up. She's alive. It's kind of weird that...
There's, like, a vortex in the middle of the lake.
It's weird that the X-Men didn't go back for the body to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, like, people in war, they go back and they try their best to recover bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that she was buried underneath, a massive lake, but I don't know. I feel like they maybe could have tried to find her.
They just need Storm to, like, make a tornado to, like, clear the bottom of the
lake
or something.
You're absolutely right. They could have done a million different things. They could have used Iceman to freeze the water or something. Like, who knows?
Anyway, she shows up and, like, there's, like, a reunion, and he's like, how did this happen? She's like, I don't know.
Quiet. I just want to make out with you in this moment.
But take off your glasses. And he's like, what?
Yeah, she's like, I can control your power now. And that's, like, an allusion to a very famous scene from the Phoenix Saga in the comics.
Yeah.
Where she does that, but, you know, she doesn't kill him, obviously. It's just showing how powerful she's become, that she can use her telekinesis.
And this scene looks good, actually, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, when he takes off his glasses and she, like, convinces him to open his eyes, and they, like, make the laser beams kind of, like, recede back into his eyeballs.
Right.
So, like, I actually thought that was, like, well done.
Yeah. I mean, the movie looks pretty good, despite the fact that it has an Instagram filter on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell they spent a lot of money on it.
Anyway, they make out and she kills him.
Why does she kill him?
I don't know. Because she's the Phoenix and she's crazy.
Right, I guess.
But in, like, following scenes, even when she is the Phoenix and she's crazy, she still, like, has some kind of connection to, like, Jean and what she cares about. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
she's got a split personality. It's just hackneyed writing, the way they introduced the Phoenix. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the comics. And as a kid, I was 2006, I was like 22 or something, when I saw this movie, I was insanely angry that they killed Cyclops. I didn't really see it coming.
Well, but that was kind of the point of this movie also, was like...
Finality.
It was a closeout, and like... So they don't need these characters going forward. You may as well kill off a few and really surprise the audience so that people are talking about it and, like, there's a twist and, you got to go see what happens, you know?
But it was so cheap and lame, and it was just disappointing. I mean, I was a big Cyclops fan. A lot of people are. To kill him, it sucks.
Eh.
So, weirdly, when Scott dies, Professor X gets, like, a psychic alert from 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
And he freaks out. And everyone in the mansion gets this alert, too. Storm and Wolverine also weirdly get it. They're all freaking out.
Yeah.
And they sort of rush around. It's like, we're going to Alkali Lake right now. And,
But just Wolverine and Storm go. And then, like, when they get there, all this, like, stuff is floating in the air. So this is, like, the mark of Jean Grey at this point, which... I know she's telekinetic and she can, like, make stuff levitate and stuff. But, like, that's her, like, signal in this movie, which, again, is a little inconsistent to me. Is that, like, Like, in the X-Men tasks, like, in the cartoon, it takes immense effort for her to raise anything like that with her mind. And she faints half the time when she does it. And now it's like they're demonstrating her power showing...
She's been unshackled.
That, like, everything around her just starts to, like, float and, like, go up towards the sky at all times.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Very stupid. And also, in a weird way, by introducing this element to her psyche, they've eliminated her character. Whatever interesting thing Famke Janssen was doing in the first two movies is a subtle character, and she's got, you know, maybe she's more powerful than you think she is, and she's got these the love triangle. Like, that's all fucking out the window, and now she's just a stupid witch character that stares, like, with black pupils into the distance and has no motivation that makes any sense and has no subtlety to her characterization.
Right.
And she's just...
It's just, like, grotesque, kind of.
Yeah, and, you know, right away to Wolverine, she's like, kill me. And it's like, yeah, you should have just killed her right there, because her character's already dead. So, it just sucks that, in a weird way, she's the star of the movie, and she's given such, like, little to work with, you know?
Yeah.
And forget about even bastardizing the whole Phoenix storyline. Like, they still could have made it work. You know what's weird? I feel like the new Phoenix movie that they're making is... Uh-huh. It's like they want to redo this one.
Yeah.
But just write it better. You know, they want to, like, we got to do the Phoenix story better. But forget about all that cosmic shit. We want to still do it, like, where it's just all within her and it's a psychological thing.
Right.
And, you know, she's dealing with this, like, immense power. What's it like for a young woman to have all this power?
I mean...
They want to do it, like, more, like, subtle. But it's also, like... Don't do that. Like, it doesn't...
I think they want to do that because they're afraid that audiences won't connect it if they do all the weird cosmic
Shi'ar and Krom-Kastron.
But I think, like, it's been proven time and time again in the Marvel movies that, like, audiences go for that, like, weird psychedelic stuff because it's awesome. Like,
yeah, I agree.
It's not, like, normally told stories. It still, like, makes sense within its own universe. You just have to, like, tell it right.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. It's the biggest mistake they keep making, that they're not... Especially when it comes to X-Men, just...
They're not fully embracing, like, the weird and wild stuff.
Yeah,
that's
the
in
more
it.
You match the comics, the better off you'll be, because the comics were always cinematic and interesting and colorful and insane.
Yeah.
And they were good and popular.
That's the thing. It's like, it's not even like it's fan service to make it close to the comics. Like, in a way, it is, because comic fans and cartoon fans are going to be into it. But also, just the stories are good.
Yeah, it's smart.
They're good because they're weird.
Yes.
But they still, like, have, you know, character-driven plots and all that stuff that you need to make it good. So just do it.
They're stupidly uptight about it. Like you said, the hope is that Marvel's going to do it right. Actually, there's been talk that this movie keeps getting pushed back, that they're just going to outright cancel it and never release it.
Oh.
So that would be interesting if that happens. Huh. So then, like, you know, they take her back to the X-Mansion, and Professor X reveals to Wolverine that, like, oh, you know, she's always been this powerful. I had to, like, hypnotize her and set up all these psychic barriers to keep this creature that she referred to as the Phoenix in our therapy sessions at bay.
Yeah.
Because it's evil. It's all rage and joy and fury. And, again, another example of Professor X's terrible therapy.
Yeah.
Which Wolverine comments on, and Professor X is like, I don't explain myself, least of all to you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weirdly... strange.
Again, like, weirdly contentious.
We're getting the Professor X from the comics when he was calling Cyclops an insufferable cur.
Right.
But he's doing it to Wolverine. And in the comics, he was ready to slap Cyclops across the face for the way he was handling the Phoenix Saga.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny. So we're getting a little bit of that here. But Wolverine's like... He's just so offended that he would... That was his solution to...
Yeah, but then he finds out why.
Cage the Beast as...
Later.
Right, yeah.
Anyway.
It's dumb. Right, yeah, exactly. The fact that, like, Professor X was right all along, and I don't know, it's stupid. You know, Wolverine really got his panties in a bunch for no reason.
Yeah.
And I always say that line because Wolverine says it earlier in the Danger Room to Storm, go get your panties in a bunch. There's, like, so many lines just like that.
Yeah.
These completely cliche, dumb, like, not funny, hackneyed lines.
Right.
So, meanwhile, we cut back to the dumb, like, D-plot of Angel. He's going to be the first one to receive the cure from his dad and his laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And they strap him in, and they really set it up as more body horror.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, they, like, zoom in on, like, the swab across his arm where they're going to...
The needle that they're going to inject him with.
And for reasons not explained at all, Angel is now having second thoughts. He struggles, he escapes, he crashes through the window, he flies away. But, like, why is he now not want the cure? If he, if at a young boy he was so horrified at having wings and being a mutant that he's shearing them off?
Well, it was because he was afraid of the judgment from his father.
Right.
It wasn't because of him, himself, you know?
I don't know. You think I think it was because he... I didn't think it was so much the judgment of his father, because his father seemed to say, like, I love you still. Like, his father's getting the cure because of his son. That's his life's mission.
Yeah, that's his life's mission, because he's so horrified to have a son with wings.
But he still loves his son. It's not like... He's not like Rogue's dad, where he cast her out.
But he's saying, like, don't worry, like, we'll cure you.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, I'm not going to accept you unless you're fully human and, like, we get rid of this mutant stuff. Whereas, like, for Archangel or Angel himself... Like, he has grown up with wings. He has wings. That's who he is. He can fly. And, like, you know, he...
I wouldn't want to get rid of my wings either.
Me neither. Yeah. But he's, like, almost willing to go along with it because he has this, like, immense pressure from his father. Right. Like, if he's ever going to get his father's approval, he has to get rid of his wings.
But he does love his father. It's not like he hates his dad.
No, it's not like he hates him, but he's approval-seeking.
He's approval-seeking.
As most people are from their parents.
True.
So, you know, it's relatable.
It is. Fine. I get it. I totally get it. But still, there's still not enough given to have it make sense.
I know. I'm reading a lot into this because
You just have to read into it to just get the idea. Like, you get the idea, but it's... Not, like, why bother showing any of it? You know what I mean? It's pointless.
Yeah, well.
Right.
They're giving examples of, like, how this war is manifesting at home.
Right, okay. So, Angel, like, you see him fly away. You know, he looks, in the close-up when they show him flying, it looks really bad. It looks super dumb.
Yeah.
But when you see him in the distance, it looks good.
Yeah.
When you see the character of Angel flying in the distance, which they show several times, it looks pretty cool to me. Uh-huh. To see, like... sort of like this large flying bird thing. But close up, it looks, I don't know, looks really lame.
I don't know either. Also, you want to see Angel in his, like, X-Men costume or whatever, but he's just, like, a regular-looking, like, shirtless man.
I want to see Angel with some sort of character agency. There's nothing to him in this movie. He's nothing.
Yeah.
In the cartoon, he's not an X-Man. He's just this rich guy who's tortured and tormented, and there's a lot to it there. It's cool.
Yeah.
And he gets captured by Apocalypse, and he transforms into Archangel, and there's a lot of more brooding and torture there.
Yeah.
In the comics, he's, like, he's got a lot of depth because he's this playboy. He's very confident and happy.
Mm-hmm.
He's happy to be a mutant. He's happy to have the power. He's happy to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
He competes for Jean's love at certain times early on. He, you know, he's interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you know, there's a lot going on to him in the comics too.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, there's nothing. And then when they bring him back for X-Men Apocalypse, there's, like, also less than nothing.
Yeah.
They turn him into Archangel. It's not done that well. It's not satisfying.
Yeah.
And also, again, the timeline here is really messed up because in the Apocalypse movie, he's born at a different time. It's unclear if he's even Warren Worthington. He's not rich. Like, who knows what's going on there?
Yeah.
So another example of the timeline being screwed up. All right, so that's the Angel scene. And then we get the scene where Magneto rescues Mystique from the convoy.
Right.
And that's kind of, like, special effects look good there.
Yeah.
Trucks are flying around, exploding. He breaks into the convoy. They release some... Mystique kills that guard.
Yeah.
He's like, told you so. That's dumb.
Dumb.
Mystique, she's free. She lets out multiple man, Jamie Madrox.
Uh-huh.
And that's a character that... seems like a really cool character. They barely use him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later in the movie, spoilers, he surrenders himself to, like, the military is invading the Magneto's camp in the woods, and they think there's 100 people there. It's just multiple man.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's revealed, it's like, sorry, you caught me. He just slides all back into one guy.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder, would it be, like...
Why didn't he, like, multiply himself more to, like, beat that army?
I don't know. Right. There's that aspect. Like, that would have been a cool scene if he's fighting the army and beats them all up.
Yeah.
Or... like, wouldn't it be interesting if the army immediately shoots him with the cure and he loses, and he, like, sacrificed himself for Magneto?
Yeah.
You know, I just think...
But we've seen that once before.
That's true, but it's just a missed opportunity.
Well, we're about to see that in the scene that we're describing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Multiple Man, like, cool character, underused.
Right.
They release the Juggernaut.
Who is not Kane Marco that we know, that with the Crystal of Sidorak, that's Professor X's half-brother, that's all out the window here.
Right.
He's just a mutant.
Yeah.
That he, once he starts moving, he's an unstoppable force. He says he wears the helmet because it'll damage his face if he clods into things. And he's Australian for some reason.
Yeah.
And he's misogynistic and dumb, and he's like a big wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And again, why have the Juggernaut? Like, why bastardize him?
Yeah.
He's redeemed in the Deadpool 2 movie to an extent. So he sucks. And then, like, they're all about to escape, but then one guard's left alive. He shoots Mystique. Who was aiming for Magneto. Mystique saves Magneto.
Takes the cure bullet for him.
Right. She transforms violently into a human form, into Rebecca Stamos.
Yeah.
Naked, laying on the floor. And Magneto even acknowledges, like, you saved me.
Yeah, he abandons her right away.
Right away. And it's like, what? Why would you have no compassion for her?
Right. She's really you've been by your side for decades. You spent the last, like, four decades.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? And he's
and
like,
we know
sorry.
That Magneto is not, like... He's a compassionate character, you know, like, as clearly seen by the buildup of his relationship with Charles Xavier.
Yes. He cares for mutants, you know. This character's just been victimized. She's his number one agent.
Yeah.
And she's been totally victimized, and the thing that he considers genocide
has just happened to her. It's just really dumb.
It's so bad. It's such a bad moment. And then that leads later to the hell hath no fury like a woman scorned line, which is one of the worst delivered lines in any movie ever.
So
it's almost like the president guy's like slobbering a bit at the side of his mouth when he says it.
I don't know.
He's just such an old man. He's just, I always imagine him drooling. So she later betrays Magneto. I don't know. Bizarre. And then that happens. Magneto bans Mystique. Beast quits the White House. So, because he learns that the cure has been weaponized, and he's totally against that.
Yeah.
So he rejoins the X-Men.
He says, I have to go back where I belong, or something like that.
I like the fact that Beast worked for the White House.
Yeah, it's cool.
I think that's like a play from the cartoon where Beast sort of becomes an informal advisor to President Kelly.
Yeah.
So, they pick up a lot of Beast from the cartoon here, I think, and that's interesting.
Yeah.
Adds a lot of depth to his character. It's like they do for Beast what they could have done for so many more characters in this movie. They give him a little depth. Like, Angel has no depth. They don't show him as a rich playboy, like, driving around in a convertible, maybe.
Right.
Like, maybe it's, like, a second side to him. Like, maybe he's on a date and a woman discovers his wings and she's freaked out.
Yeah.
Kind of. You know what I mean? Like, they could have, like, shown some scenes.
I know what you mean.
Right. Beast at least gets that characterization. Meanwhile, back at the X-Mansion, Jean's waking up from a coma or something. And they're mirroring the scene in the first X-Men when Wolverine was in the gurney in the X-Mansion. And they just flat out say it, too. Like, this is what happened in the first movie between us, but the situation is reversed.
Right.
Like, that's literally the dialogue, right?
Right. Just, like, don't say it, show it.
Right, there's no... Everyone...
Like, the X-Men fans who saw that movie and would be into that, like, get it already. And the fans who... Or, like, people seeing the movie who are not fans who didn't see it don't care.
It doesn't need to be explained. What's with the fact that when Jean wakes up, she has to make out with the first man she sees?
I don't know.
She has uncontrollable lust, murderous lust.
Well, that's she's some like bullshit. Plotting to do the same thing to Wolverine that she just did to Scott.
But I don't think she's even intentionally wanted to kill Scott.
Really?
I don't think so. I think she's just out of control, like, lust monster.
So and, weird.
Right. Wolverine can take it, as we'll see later in the movie, because he can heal.
Yeah.
But, Jean's just... So she starts, like, making out with him like an animal, and it's just stupid. She rips off his belt with her psychic powers.
Yeah, that's so dumb.
And he's like, wait a second.
This isn't really you.
Yeah.
Usually you make me work for it a little bit.
Yeah, it's
and
like...
now you're like...
Right, you're a slut now, that's bad. It's like almost like weird shaming of female sexuality, I think.
I don't know.
It's all
so weird.
Hackneyed bullshit. And then he finally asks the question, where's Scott? He's holding his glasses at this whole time she's been making out with him.
Yeah.
And she's kind of in denial about it, and when confronted about it, she's like, kill me, you know. The real side of her wakes up for a second.
Right.
And then she destroys the glasses and, like, blows down the X doors and escapes the mansion. Professor X then comes down and confronts Wolverine, and he, like, blames it all on him.
Yeah.
He's like, what did you do?
Like, nothing.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. He was just standing
just
there.
He just stood there.
And she woke up. And then he's like, I warned you, Wolverine.
Yeah, warn me of what? Like...
I guess it's, like, in-your-face kind of moment to Logan when he questioned Professor X's therapy techniques.
Yeah, but it's unrelated.
Right. All right. Let's plow through this here. Jean escapes back to her childhood home, which is something we see in the Dark Phoenix saga in the comics and the cartoon.
Yeah.
Except it was always at nighttime when she did it. Here it's in the daytime.
Somehow everybody knows that that's exactly where she's going to go back to, so they all converge on her home.
Right. Professor X is there with Storm and Wolverine. Magneto shows up with Juggernaut and Pyro and his acolytes.
His gang.
Yeah. And they're all told to wait outside. You know, they see Jean in her childhood room. She's, like, throwing shit around, furniture and stuff. And Professor X is telling her, you need to control it. You've already killed Scott.
Everything is rising again. All right. What a surprise.
Magneto's like, I want to set you free. I'm going to, you know, let you be who you are. And at this point, like, Jean's not... She's just crazy.
I mean, it's the same rhetoric that... that Magneto used on Mystique initially to, like, win her over, you know? So
yeah, you're beautiful the way you are.
Thinks it's going to work on her, and she's like, you sound exactly like Charles Xavier. Like, leave me the fuck alone.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of that weird shit going on. Like, two powerful men trying to control these powerful female characters. Then, you know, Professor X gets into some weird mental battle with Jean. So the X-Men start fighting because they know things are going bad. They start fighting Juggernaut and stuff. And, I don't know, like, the fight Logan has with Juggernaut's pretty dumb.
Yeah.
Because there's one shot where Juggernaut punches Wolverine across the face and he just stands there and takes it.
Yeah.
So that makes you wonder if Juggernaut's even strong.
Also, Juggernaut is given explicit instructions not to let anybody inside the house, but as soon as Wolverine charges him for the first time, he throws him through the window into the house instead of in any other direction.
I think the special effects are cool here, though, because Jean's causing a whole bunch of physics to go crazy, and Wolverine has to, like, claw his way on the ceiling.
Again, it's, like, not necessarily part of Jean's normal character that she makes everything rise to the ceiling, but that's what's happening here, and that's what makes it hard for Wolverine to get to her.
Yeah.
He has to, like, yeah, whatever.
Anyway, long story short, Jean kills Professor X. He evaporates her.
She evaporates him.
Right, yeah, exactly. And another classic dumb hackneyed filmmaking moment, he turns to Logan right before he dies and smiles.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Like, I mean, I guess the implication is, like, don't worry, I'm going to be alive because I'm going to transfer my body to another consciousness. Not that he's told anyone he's going to do that. But just the idea that, like, when in movies where characters smile before they're about to be killed. I mean, I guess, like, the classic moment is in Star Wars where Obi-Wan is about to be killed by Darth Vader and he looks at Luke and he just smiles. But the difference there is that, you know, something mysterious happens when Obi-Wan dies. His body vanishes.
Right.
Here, Professor X is evaporated to death.
Right.
I don't know. It's bad. And then, you know, we get this terrible scene of Logan and Storm crying over Professor X's wheelchair.
Yeah.
Jean goes with Magneto. You know, they don't stop her. But just, I think that's just awful acting. Then we get the Professor X funeral. Storm's giving the eulogy. It's actually pretty touching. I thought she says a lot of things like, you know, he brought people together, he helped people, he cared for people, gave them a home and a family. You know, Professor X is a great man.
Yeah.
Also, Patrick Stewart, conversely, is a great man. I'll be sad at his funeral.
Not conversely. I mean, it goes together.
Oh, right. Yeah, it goes together, right. Yeah. Parallelly. Like, I don't know. Just something about the tombstone of Professor X. It's Patrick Stewart's face emblazoned on there. Really well done.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I just felt like...
It made
you sad. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be sad when Patrick Stewart dies one day. I'm not ready for him to pass.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you know, there's talks...
Neither is he. He's fine.
No, yeah, he's fine. He's 77. There's talks that... that really excited me that he's going to reprise Captain Picard in the new Star Trek TV show, which would be insane. I don't know how he would be able to commit to something like that.
It might just be a cameo, though, right?
It would have to be an extended cameo. There's no way he would commit to, like, a 15 to 20 episode story arc where he's the center of attention in every episode as an old man.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. I can see him as, like, an extended cameo where he appears, like, occasionally as, like, a wise old man or, like...
An admiral or something.
Yeah, in a key scene where he, like, comes to save the day. But I can't see him be the center of attention as a main character in a TV show.
No, you never know.
I mean, I would love to see it.
Yeah.
But, you know... Anyway, so I was a little touched by Professor X's funeral. I mean, that's the thing. Like, this movie does some stuff. Like, it does some X-Men things. It's just... A lot of it's tough to take because they're just trying to end it all. They're trying to, like, hammer it into the ground. And it's just, a lot of it's done poorly, so, I mean, okay, so he's dead, or is he? meanwhile, Kitty Pryde is sad, and she's crying in her room, and she's, like, one of the few characters that gets, like, she does, like, a lot with a little.
Yeah.
And it's why they probably brought her back for X-Men Days of Future Past, because she's pretty good in the role.
Yeah.
Iceman, like, can't help but flirt with her in a weird way.
Well, he's, like, trying to make his friend feel better, but also he's, like, overstepping the line a little bit. You know, he, like, does something really nice for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he creates an ice skating rink, because she's... I don't know. I guess, like, she's from Chicago.
She misses the first snow.
She misses home or whatever. And he sees the ice skates in her closet. So he takes her outside to the fountain and makes it into an ice... They have, like, a touching scene where they're, like, ice skating together.
Mm-hmm. He makes his own ice skates on his sneakers.
Right. But, like, also, you know, that's, like, a little too romantic. And, like, Rogue sees them out the window. And
so she's convinced she's going to get the cure now. Wolverine tries to stop her. He's like, don't do it for some boy.
Right. Which is, like, dumb. Anyway, whatever.
It's absolutely dumb. So, back to the... Now, so Magneto is setting up an army base camp in the forest somewhere. I guess in, like, the Redwood Forest. I don't know. And Jean immediately threatens him. He's like, Jean, you must join my army and help me.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're trying to control me. And she has the mutant cure gun that Magneto had or something. And she points it at him and he's terrified.
Yeah.
And he has to convince her, like, no, you will be key in my plan to, like, be free or something.
Yeah.
So she lets Magneto get away, I guess. It's weird that she's even going along with him. It makes no sense.
Right.
So back at the X-Mansion, Storm and Beast are discussing what they're going to do with the school. And Beast's like, yep, we got to close it. Professor X is dead. Yeah. Send all these orphan kids home, you know?
Right.
And Storm's like, no, I'm going to keep it open. It's almost like it's a weird, tough choice for her. Oh, because yeah. Angel drops by. He's like, hey, this is a place where you...
This is a safe haven for mutants, isn't it? And she's like, yes, it is. Come on in. We're keeping the school open.
Yeah.
Like, we'll find your room.
Wow. That was just another, like, weird, offbeat...
Too on the nose.
Yeah, it's like, why... And Beast smiles like, yeah, we'll keep it open. Even though he was just suggesting they close it down.
I also... Like you were saying before, I don't like that they set it up beforehand that Professor X is like, well, Storm, maybe one day you're going to be the one to... keep it going. It's here
dumb foreshadowing,
because it's like it's dumb foreshadowing, and it's like he's giving her permission to do that, which she like maybe is thinking back on now, like, I would like it better if she like didn't need all that provocation and she just like decided to take the reins and be like,
yeah
this is an awesome place, like, you know, extending from that eulogy, like, this is the vision of Charles Xavier, and like it's my vision too, to have like peace amongst humans and mutants, Storm, and we need a safe place. And like,
she's like a crappy character in this movie. She doesn't have the strength and warrior agency and like intelligence that she has in the cartoons and comics.
Yeah.
She's just like, I don't know, like, so, like self-doubting and weirdly unsure of herself and all these things that Storm isn't. Storm's really strong and like her personality is almost a force onto itself.
Yeah.
And we don't see any of that here.
Right.
She's kind of wimpy. Meanwhile, Jean reaches out to Logan in the same way she reached out to Scott.
Yeah.
So he's possessed now to find her. So he heads off. Then there's like they're giving the cure away for the first time, and there's a huge like protest outside the cure in some city.
Bobby and Pyro confront each other. Meanwhile, Rogue joins the line to get the cure.
Right, and Pyro blows up the cure center with his fire powers. There's confusion and chaos, and they all run away. I think that scene was like kind of decent in a weird way of the chaos.
Yeah,
that, you know, could explode in this mutant world.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it. Then, like, this motivates the president to say, like, okay, we finally got to weaponize this shit and go after Magneto. And Bolivar Trask, who we said is just, like, an advisor to the president. He's nothing else in this movie. He's like, yeah, I'm with you. Let's do it. Then there's, like, this weird scene of the military getting ready with the cure. And you have the great Lee Emery, the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing a voiceover, but he's heard but not seen.
Yeah.
And that's kind of weird. That always stuck out to me as pointless. Wolverine invades the forest compound. This kind of reminded me of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Or Robin Hood, Men in Tights, take your pick. Where there's just like this weird band out in the forest with their like bows and arrows.
Yeah.
Essentially, but I mean, it's just one gross guy that can grow like weird wooden spikes out of his arms.
Bone spears or something.
Yeah.
It's like a gross power.
And his power is just to throw them at Wolverine. And he gets Wolverine a bunch of times, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, Wolverine kills
prevails,
him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of killing in this movie. Like, Storm kills someone in this movie. Storm kills the woman that can run fast and can detect mutants. She electrocutes her to death,
right,
which I thought was insane. Anyway, you know, Wolverine invades his compound. He hears Magneto give a speech about how he got, this is our time to strike. You know, he's going after Jean, but Magneto catches him and is like, he's like, I'm not here to fight you. He's like, okay. And he throws Wolverine like 1,000 meters away. And so his plan to rescue Jean fails. Meanwhile, like we said, the scene, the White House invades the compound. It was all multiple man, so they capture him. They don't capture whatever Magneto's band is. The X-Men are getting ready to fight. So they know Magneto's going to invade Alcatraz Island to kill the boy. That's the source of the cure, Leech.
Right.
So the X-Men are suiting up. There's a cute moment where Beast is like, oh, I can't believe this outfit used to fit me. Yeah. That's kind of funny. But then the rest of it's crap.
Yeah.
Because Wolverine is now the leader of the X-Men. He's like a military general.
Right. He's giving inspiring, like a rousing speech to like the younger generation to get them to like go along with the cause. Like Storm is the leader at this point. Yeah. She should be the one that's the one like leading that. The band of mutants.
Or Beast.
Or Beast.
Right. Because they established that he's like used to be on the X-Men. And was
right. Like, and he's like older and like mature and stuff. Whatever.
The fact that it's going to Wolverine, it undercuts what Beast even said about him earlier, where he thinks he's just an like out of control animal.
Yeah.
Now they're just friends. And he's like, yeah, you're a responsible guy. I'll follow you. Right. Like none of that is established. Although that's what the case is now, so that's freaking awful. And then Storm hints that, like, you know what you have to do, which is essentially kill Jean.
Right.
And like, yep, okay.
Yeah.
So that's dumb. And then, you know, the X-Men are blasting off in the jet. And I just thought it was weird, too, that Storm and Wolverine are flying the jet. It should be Beast and Storm.
Yeah.
You know, they establish in the next movie, in the first class, that Beast invented the Blackbird.
Yeah.
So I don't know why Beast is, like, not flying. Because
Wolverine is going to have future movies and Beast is not.
Right, yeah. They don't know what they're doing in this movie. Then we get the infamous Golden Gate Bridge scene.
Right.
Which looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Magneto lifts the bridge with relative ease and just...
To connect Alcatraz.
To the mainland. To the mainland
which and get his band of...
Is like, the bridge that far to be able to do that, you think?
I don't know.
Who knows? I guess a lot of people die in the bridge, too. It's pretty sad. A lot of families die.
And that's how he gets all the mutants onto Alcatraz, his brotherhood of mutants.
Right. I thought that was a funny line by Jerkenice. It's like, how are you going to get us there? Because I can't swim.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of funny. And then Beast sees this and he gives off his classic, oh my stars and godders line, which I appreciated as an X-Men fan, but whatever. then there's like, you know, Magneto's hordes are invading the military. They're all sitting there with their cure weapons. And I don't like that Pyro's like, let's take it down! Like, he's, like, Magneto's general in a weird way. And it's just so lame to me to see, like, a character with blown-out frosted-tip haircut and, you know, a millennial, like, high-fashion outfit lead an army. It's just nothing about the character matches what the character is doing.
Yeah.
Then the X-Men arrive, and I always thought this scene was lame, where they create Storm, shoots a bunch of lightning to create a line between the mutants and the army.
Yeah.
And the X-Men stand, they're the last stand between the line that cannot be crossed.
Yeah.
And Wolverine's like, hold this line! And for some reason the army's listening to the X-Men.
Right.
They're not shooting at them, too. Like, that would have been cool. Like, for some reason the army is really on the X-Men's side in this whole fight that's about to unfold.
Right.
None of that makes sense to me. That it would have been more complex and interesting if the army is trying to stop the X-Men as well. If the president's like, take out the X-Men too. And there'd be like a moment where he's like even sir, even Beast, he's like, yes. And that was his friend established, but that's all out the window. No one cares about that. So then this really lame-ass fight breaks out between a bunch of anonymously black clothing clad evil mutants and the X-Men. It's a bunch of like nonsense chaos.
Yeah.
I do like the scene where Kitty Pryde goes and rescues Kid Leech and Juggernaut's racing in. That's kind of a nice scene visually.
Right.
And
but also it it's cool because like her powers are suspended because she's near him, so she like needs to call for help from Bobby or whoever.
No, what happens is she uses it against Juggernaut.
Right.
So she stands there with Leech and Juggernaut smashes his head at them.
Yeah.
But because his powers are negated, he just falls on the floor. He doesn't smash through the wall.
Right, yeah.
And I like that she calls him a dickhead because I thought that was appropriate. I like that one Kitty Pryde line. It's funny to me. Of all the dumb hackneyed lines, that one made me chuckle. But then, like, Juggernaut in the scene before says, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! Which was a reference to that another horrible one. YouTube video. It was really stupid that they even went there. I think that's the only reason they even put Juggernaut in the movie, was because of that dumb...
They wanted to put that line in.
Right. And then, you know, then there's another scene where... Iceman versus Pyro, fire versus ice, who's gonna win?
Yeah.
And it's pretty stupid because they're just shooting fire versus ice at each other.
Yeah.
And then, but at least you get the character arc, finally Iceman turns into Iceman.
Right.
And he's like, I stayed in school and this is what I learned. You know, you should stay in school or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it looks okay, but I'm still not getting the full Iceman that I need from a movie.
You want those ice slides.
I mean, they show him in, like, Days of Future Past, but it's still not enough and whatever. So that's sort of the end of Pyro in a way, and they work as a team to bring down Magneto.
Uh-huh.
You know, Magneto thinks Wolverine is going to be the one to kill him, but no, it was all a trick because Beast stabs Magneto with the cure.
Yeah.
So now he's cured and he's really feeble and useless.
Right.
And weirdly, and so then Jean Grey is also causing a bunch of mayhem with her powers, and they have this, Magneto's like, what have I done?
Yeah.
Like, he regrets his whole course of action.
Right.
Like, this is what you wanted.
Yeah, it's unrealistic.
I don't buy that he's all of a sudden changing his mind about that. There's some more fighting nonsense, and then Wolverine's the one, he tells Storm, I'm the only one who can stop her.
Right.
Which I'm like, really?
Well, is it because they have, like, a love bond, or is it because he heals incredibly fast so she can't vaporize him?
I just feel like Storm could be in the unseen in the distance and rain down 1,000 thunderbolts on Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Because she's proven to be vulnerable to a stab wound, which is what Wolverine does to her.
Right.
So, clearly, a bolt of lightning could sear through her flesh or, you know, blow her head off. I don't get why Wolverine, you know, safely at a distance, they could kill her.
Yeah.
I mean, they show that the army, like, shoots a million cure needles at her, and she eviscerates them in a second. But those cure needles aren't moving as fast as a bolt of lightning. I don't know.
I don't really
think. And she also kills a million army guys, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
I guess. So Wolverine's the only one who can walk through this onslaught of her shooting waves of her power. And, like, you see his skeleton exposed and keep healing. His Wolverine, his healing factor is really working overtime here. It's kind of amazing how fast he's healing. And then he's like, I love you, and stabs her, and it's really lame.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, one of the stupidest parts of the movie in a lot of ways, the way he has to kill Jean. And, you know, in the Wolverine Origins movie 2, the one where he goes to Japan,
mm-hmm.
they reference this moment several times through flashbacks.
Yeah.
Which is, like, because that movie's kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
And in those moments, it works. You know, he would be haunted by this.
Yeah.
But again, all this shit's undone by the timeline continuity in the end. Like, this never ends up happening based mm-hmm. when they change the timeline. Then, you know, the day is essentially saved. They have another funeral for Scott and Jean. I don't know why they didn't have Scott's funeral earlier. But they bury Scott and Jean. And I don't know, it's like, to me it's like another fuck you to the fans, like, all your favorite characters are dead, here lies Professor X, Jean, Scott.
Yeah.
It's like, great. It's like, you know, if we do more movies, we're not gonna have these characters.
Well, they weren't planning to.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, who knows what they were planning. And then, so they're dead, and Rogue comes back to the mansion, and she cures herself just to, you know, hang out with Bobby. Which is dumb. It's like, is she even gonna be welcomed back in the school now? She doesn't have any powers.
Right, that's the thing, is that, like, it's, you know, her whole, like, personality and life and, like, future have been changed because now she's not a mutant anymore. Like, her whole identity is different.
Again, this is weirdly retconned because in the X-Men Days of Future Past movie, in the dystopian future, in the Rogue cut of the movie, Rogue still has her powers.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And at the end of this movie, they showed that maybe the cure doesn't last that long because Magneto gets his power back too. So, maybe the cure is a bunch of bunk.
Which makes this whole movie irrelevant.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things you could say, like, stupid about this movie. Beast becomes ambassador to the UN from the United States. That's good for Beast. Wolverine, says to the distance, good job, Furball.
Yeah.
So they were friends. They had their animosity is totally gone.
Right, for no reason.
It looks like the way they present it, looks like Wolverine inherits the mansion. Like, it belongs to him, so...
No.
I mean, he's running the school with Storm, essentially.
And he's just there.
Yeah, I know, but to me, it just looked like he inherited the mansion. Like, this is... The way they zoom out of the mansion just shows Wolverine sort of, like, walking around the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see the Golden Gate Bridge is being rebuilt. Angel's flying around. Oh, in the fight, Angel saved his father, who's going to be killed by Magneto's mutants.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess they're friends now. And then we see Magneto is free in Golden Gate Bridge Park somewhere, playing chess.
By himself, with metal...
With a metal chess set. And
we see that it moves a little bit, so he's getting his powers back.
Right. And, like, why
was... we don't know.
Why is he not been captured? You know,
why is he allowed to go free?
Yeah. I mean, Magneto being free at the end of these movies becomes, like, a joke almost a lot of times. Like, at the end, especially at the end of X-Men Apocalypse, when he's just inexplicably free after destroying half the world.
Yeah. So...
You know, the ending, and then there's a post-credit sequence where Professor X is shown to be alive in a body that Morgan McTaggart is preserving.
Right, yeah. The same one that he was talking about when he was giving a lesson in the X-Men.
Right, but it's like, weirdly, it's like a clone of his body with a beard that makes no sense.
And I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
And that's the end of the movie.
Right. So, as always, when we talk about a movie, we're like, we're not going to go plot point for plot point. We don't need to, but now... We have, because we couldn't help ourselves.
Right. So, this movie, to me, is bad. I'm sure a lot of you don't disagree. Some of you might. I mean, you enjoyed it rewatching.
I mean, there's a ton of bad things about the movie, but I just like watching the X-Men, like, go around and do X-Men stuff.
It's not terrible. It's not on
the level... It is. It's bad, but,
like... Well, but it's not... I'm going to say it's not Batman versus Superman bad.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's not Man of Steel bad, because at least this movie is coherent.
It's watchable.
It's watchable. It makes sense. It doesn't... It's not, like, such a contradict character. The characters don't really contradict
themselves.
If it
was, like, an isolated movie and there were no movies before or after this, there were no, like, character arcs to worry about or anything, it wouldn't be so bad.
Right. No, I disagree with that. I think it would be bad if it was totally
standalone. Yeah, no, it would still be bad. But, like, a lot of the things that we mention as problems...
Right. I just think it's your ordinary bad superhero movie. It's not, like, offensively bad. In the X-Men world, it's a bad movie. Like, even in the X-Men film, in X-Men Apocalypse, Bryan Singer makes a joke about it, saying the third movie's always the worst one. But fuck you, dude. Like, X-Men Apocalypse wasn't that great either. So, you know. But, and also, like... I don't know. I mean, what's really bad about it is that, like, X-Men Origins Wolverine, which was the one that came out next, was really bad. Like, that one is pure schlock.
Uh-huh.
And I think that makes X-Men 3 worse than it was, too, because it was, like, trending in this direction of badness.
That's why I'm saying, like, take this one in isolation if you can. Don't worry about what comes before or after. Just, like, you're sitting down with some popcorn for 2 hours, like...
Well, that's how I felt seeing
just it. Just let it go by.
In the movies. I thought, I was like, okay. I think at the time when I was 20, I was like, all right, well, it's always great to see Wolverine's claws and Iceman ice up and stuff. Yeah. So I was like, I mean, it had enough in there. It was pretty... But you could tell it wasn't good. I mean, you knew Brett Ratner wasn't a good director as Bryan Singer, and Bryan Singer wasn't that great to begin with. So in the pantheon of X movies, it ranks near the bottom. It's a fight between this and Wolverine Origins, which is truly worse.
Yeah.
I would say this is worse because at least Wolverine Origins is fun bad. Like, when we watch that movie, it'll be mildly entertaining because it's so stupid.
Yeah. All right. So, let's jump to a more... I promised that we would say positive things about this at the end.
But, okay.
Like, are there positive things? Ellen Page is Kitty Pryde.
Good.
Good one.
Iceman, not as bad as I thought. He's okay. He had a character arc. Fine.
All right. That's pretty good. It moves at a reasonable pace.
Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen have charm, despite the fact that the script's really bad. I didn't like that he died, that they killed Professor X. That was stupid, especially when they
it was dumb,
twist ending. He's alive, and then it was also stupid in the end of Wolverine 2, where
no, we're saying good things now.
Okay, right, fine.
We saw all our friends.
Yeah.
That's
positive to you. We saw all our friends. Oh, yeah. I thought me personally, I like Kelsey Grammer's Beast.
Okay,
I'm not. That I thought he was a good character. I would have liked to see more of him.
Yeah, all right.
You know, the 10 seconds that James Marsden as Cyclops in it was good.
Yep.
The rest of it, I had not much to redeem for me. I don't like the way it looked visually. I thought the special effects were fine.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the weird Instagram filter on it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like the score. I thought the score was really stupid.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
So, not my favorite.
Yeah, not my favorite.
You know, okay. So far I'd rank the movies X-Men 1, 2, and 3. To me, X-Men 1's always been my favorite.
Like I said, like this is the first time I've seen this movie in 12 years, apparently.
Yeah.
I was entertained, but mostly because I didn't remember what happened for the most part.
Like, new to you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, look at this.
That's interesting. I just think it looked... to me, like, more offensive than anything is the makeup and hair coloring they do on Storm and Wolverine.
Well, that's like a trope of a lot of movies of like the early 2000s, yeah. late 90s, right? Is like
the way they
you see all your
people.
Old friends, but they have a makeover. So you're like, wow, look at Storm. Doesn't she look great? Yeah. You know?
They got better. Stupid. They got better with the way Hugh Jackman looked in the future movies. He looked better in, especially Logan. He looks appropriately gritty.
Yeah.
Even though he's supposed to be older.
All right, so in more recent movies, we saw Ant-Man this weekend. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Like for 2 minutes.
Yeah, good movie.
Very good. Very entertaining. I thought, weirdly, it was more interesting than funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of jokes in there that did not land for me.
Uh-huh.
But, and especially with Paul Rudd, who I like Paul Rudd, but
yeah.
I thought he was not funny at all. But at the same time, I thought the movie was very interesting, and I was very marveled up.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was, like, laughing out loud riotously during this movie, but...
Marvel does great sci-fi.
Yeah.
I love talking about the Quantum Zone.
I know, I love the look of the Quantum Zone.
Yeah, I want to see more about this Quantum Zone.
Yeah,
I want to know
it's
what's
cool.
I wanted someone needlessly explain to me what the Quantum Zone is.
This is like the weird and wild side of Marvel that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Ant-Man is like a minor superhero, but even Ant-Man gets like this really cool like I don't know, like sci-fi angle.
Yeah, absolutely. You think he would just shrink to an ant size or grow up to be like the size of Gargantuan or something, but he can shrink even further to the Quantum Zone.
You know, it seems like a very minor thing that he just gets bigger and smaller, and then
right.
like his things can also get bigger and smaller.
Yeah.
Like it seems dumb, but like in a way, it's very artful. You know, like a lot of like modern artists, especially that you see in like MoMA or wherever, like a lot of it is about scale and like how things. Are different than how you expect them to be when you just, like, change the scale a little bit, you know? And I think, like, that same kind of, like, playfulness happens a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's a small trick, but they use it in inventive ways, and it, like, keeps you interested.
I just think there's just something mind-blowingly true about the fact that the more you shrink, the more the scale of the universe gets weirder and weirder.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like a universe unto itself.
Yeah.
The microcosmic scale of smallness in the universe.
Right. It's like the same as the macrocosmic scale
yeah.
in some ways. Yeah.
Right. It's like, that's the most insane thing about that's why the universe has us all beat as a concept as human beings, because it's just, you know.
Yeah.
There's things going on in the insane margins of infinity that uh-huh. we'll never understand. And I like that. And this is not going to make any sense, but I like when he shrinks, you think that he's reached the end of the smallness, because you get into the place of the quantum level of where there's just, like, you know, there's just, like, cylinders and blobs or something. Like, you know what I'm talking about in quantum
yeah.
theory, where they say that, like, vibrating strings?
Yeah.
Like, he gets to that level, like, oh, that's the bottom level, vibrating strings. But then there's, like, a level beneath that, which
yeah.
they refer to as the quantum zone.
Right.
Where it's, like, this weird, gooey, abstract, psychedelic place.
Yeah.
And, to me, that's like,
yeah,
like what's going on there?
The universe is completely infinite.
Yeah,
on like the micro scale.
Yeah,
also,
yeah,
you know? Like
I just love all the fake science behind it with
it's pretty awesome
with Dr. Pym, and he builds a quantum tunnel.
Yeah,
and like all this stuff. Like it was a very satisfying movie too. And I thought the ending was very satisfying. And
yeah, the acting was great. The kid actor,
yeah, kid actor is great.
His daughter
a
is
rare,
like, so good.
Rare great kid actor in a
yeah.
movie.
But all the adult actors were really great, too, I
yeah,
thought.
I love, what's her name, Evangeline Lilly. I
yeah.
find her so pretty.
That's what you like about her?
Yeah. No, I don't know. I just I love her as the Wasp. She's a great
yeah.
character.
Yeah.
I love Michael Douglas. He's an amazing actor. And who's the guy that plays Bill Foster? Morpheus.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, yeah. His name yeah. just gave me. I love him, too.
He was good.
He's a great
Michelle
actor.
Pfeiffer was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, if you haven't seen the movie, we're not going to go
point
or give away spoilers
really
or anything,
it.
But, like, yeah,
also,
it's fun. Go see it.
It reminded me of Doctor Strange, and it's just, like, an irreverent Marvel movie
yeah.
where it's, like, a lesser character.
Right.
But
like, you don't go in expecting, like, so much because it's not, you know,
it's
your
just,
favorite Marvel hero necessarily,
yeah.
but...
Like, it's popcorn goodness, and it makes you... Like, I can't wait for Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for Ant-Man 3. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm invested in these characters. You know, I like it because it's light. It's not heavy like the X-Men.
Right.
Or, you know, like the other more bigger properties. It's
yeah.
very light on its feet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of interesting areas to explore.
Yeah.
Were there any other superhero cameos in this movie or no? There's no other Marvel
no,
heroes
not
that
really.
Show up, right?
I mean, there's characters from the last, you know, his friend Luis like oh, that yeah. actor was yeah, really yeah. good too. All you those, know, he was those good side comic characters, relief also.
Yeah, they're hilarious.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, very good. See Ant-Man and the Wasp. Keep giving Marvel your money. Encourage them to keep making movies like this.
Yeah.
They know how
give
to, like...
Give Marvel all your money.
Yeah, I mean, they know how to, like... It's weird because they weren't trying to make a great movie. They were trying to make a very good Marvel movie and a very good summer lighthearted movie, especially after the Avengers 3, which was so heavy and dark. And this touches on that a little bit.
Right.
We won't go into spoilers, but, like...
And they did it. They succeeded.
Yeah, they're, like, they know how to, like... They're palate cleansers. They know how to, like... They're making these movies, like, in a weird tapestry.
Yeah.
And that's... I'm telling... Like, people... Like, you know, our pal Adam in the X-Men group is like, oh, I don't want to see Disney own the X-Men, and, you know...
Yeah.
I'm like, I want to see it. I got to see how they're going to touch the X-Men.
We all know all you right, want to see
right.
it.
You're right. I say it every time. Okay, so let's... Should we end this thing?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Facebook group. Get ready for season 5. We're going to need some fan help with that one. We'll get to more of that later. And rate us 5 stars on iTunes, wherever you rate and review podcasts. That goes a long way to helping us. Sonia, any final words about X-Men 3 or Ant-Man and the Wasp?
No, that's it.
All right, you got it. Enough said?
Enough.
All right, enough is enough. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.